Hello, this is Andy Bombeck, and welcome to another Mojo Music, where I'll be reading articles from Mojo Magazine, along with playing snippets of music. Please let Sun Sounds Radio know if you enjoyed today's program, or how it could be improved. Okay, as I mentioned last week, I'm going to continue reading articles from the January 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine. I'm going to start off with an article about Neil Inez of the Ruddles and Monty Python and the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. And then the passing of Kris Kristofferson on September 28th, 2024. And a classic album review of Rocket to Russia by the Ramones. Okay, I'm going to begin today's program with the article about Neil Inez, titled Idiot Savant. Neil Inez was the musical marvel of the Ruddles, Pythons, and the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. With a genius for treating silliness seriously and vice versa, 5 years since he passed, his wife's memoir, an upcoming tribute show, and a Bonzo's box set mean 2024 ends in celebration. Yet, in his time, the business treated him shabbily. It's a massive body of work, friends and colleagues tell Jim Irvine, but he got rather overlooked. To those who first saw him on screen as part of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band on Do Not Adjust Your Set, in cameos during Monty Python's Flying Circus, in his own series, The Inez Book of Records, or as the storyteller in The Raggy Dolls, Neil Inez was a twinkly, good-humored man with kind eyes and an easy smile, who was relishing what he was doing and doing it well. He didn't present as the kind of famous person with a huge interior void needing to be filled with attention and applause. In fact, a slight resistance was detectable. But you noticed him precisely because he wasn't formed of the same stuff as those around him. Instantly likable and trustworthy, something about him was also far away. If asked about himself, he would often declare that he had the mind of a 4-year-old. I am constantly asking why. He would always recall being taken, aged 4, to visit his Scottish granny. There were some large brown doors in her house, and Inez asked if he could paint them. His mother said absolutely not, but his granny, overhearing, said, "Of course you can paint them," and fetched a bucket of water and a large brush. He never forgot the feeling of joy he had that day when his granny taught him the power of saying yes instead of no. Known mostly as a gifted musician with a humorous bent, the words and music of the Ruddles were all his own work. Despite what the Beatles' publisher said, he was also a thinker, drinker, smoker, crossword fanatic, rheumator who refused to exercise, a doting husband, father, and grandfather who loved an easy life and hated conflict. But this gentle, generous man had also been battered by his chosen profession. Whenever it looked as if his ship was coming in, circumstances would often conspire to sink it just before it reached harbor. Many of the Inez generation, born at the end of the Second World War, shared his sense of life as a precious gift that mankind takes for granted. They would just miss National Service and the Korean War. The only horror we experienced was the black and white minstrel show, Inez noted. His easygoing demeanor and musical facility made him the perfect fulcrum for the barely controlled mayhem of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, a loose aggregate of self-herded cats, strained from various London art schools, fronted by the genuinely eccentric creative Catherine Wheel via Stanshall. They dressed up as 1930s spivvies to play silly songs of similar vintage, illustrating them with cutout speech bubbles, hats, masks, mannequins, and exploding robots. London's art colleges were filled with kids who didn't want to do things the way their forefathers had. They wanted to ban the bomb and literally and figuratively paint the town red. Goldsmiths College in New Cross, Southeast London, which Inez attended from 1963, was famed for its dances, attracting acts including Booker T and the MGs, Thelonious Monk, and Muddy Waters. Student Yvonne Hilton was at one of these in 1965 when the Bonzos were supporting. She missed their set, but was pulled onto the dance floor by a roadie enlisting likely dance partners for members of the band. She was dragged towards a younger man with a mustache wearing a vintage old man suit and floppy cap. We danced once, then drifted apart, eyes ablaze with the fun of it all. Some weeks later, the young man, Neil Inez, played Yvonne the theme to François Truffaut's 1962 film Jules et Jim on a college piano in lieu of a chat-up line, and soon she was witnessing his daft band perform in a noisy South London pub. The rowdy clientele was silenced by the Bonzo's opening gambit, a frantic chorus of Rule Britannia, punctuated by an explosion from the inside the zinc dustbin placed center stage. And here's a little bit of that song, Cool Britannica, by the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
Britannia, Britannia, you are cool. Take a trip, Britons ever, ever, ever shall be hip, 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 hip.
It wasn't safe, it was unhinged, archaic and free, remembers Yvonne, and exhilarating. There was encore after encore, as they stopped at the cabbie's pie stall by Chelsea Bridge on their way home. Inez turned to her and whispered, "Love me, love my band." Reader, she married him. Neil Inez was born in Essex and raised for a while in Germany. His father, Charles, had stayed in the army after the war. His tiny mother, Petta, "I'm 5 feet tall if I stand on a halfpenny," was judge at Crufts. He attended a grammar school in Norwich and was given piano lessons from the age of 7, but his abiding first love was art. At Goldsmiths, Inez, for all of his affability, chafed at being guided, wresting entries from his tutors to make geometric abstracts or use florid art speak to describe his work. If something didn't instinctively transmit what it was about, why bother doing it? he began to extract himself from the formal course. Joining the Bonzos was a way of expressing himself that didn't conform to any construct or curriculum. Neil was nothing if not stubborn, says Yvonne. The Bonzos were 3 years in when newish member Vernon Dudley, Bohe Norwell, mentioned that his younger lodger could play a bit of piano. "We didn't have anyone who did that, so we said, bring him in," says saxophonist and member of the Bonzos' founding trio, Rodney Slater. Neil brought hard work and discipline. He became a very meticulous and accurate player. Of course, playing an upright meant he had his back to us. So, to keep an eye on us, he put a stick-on rearview mirror on top of the piano. The band turned professional when Inez, Roger Ruskin, Spear, and Legs, Larry Smith, finally left college in 1966. They recorded a couple of singles for Parlophone, which went nowhere, but meant they bumped into the Beatles at Abbey Road during the recording of Revolver. Inez, a huge fan, vividly remembered hearing Harrison's I Want to Tell You and its distinctive crushed piano chords coming from Studio 2. He stood and listened in the corridor and then went back to his band mixing My Brother Makes the Noises for the talkies, thinking they could probably do better. Nonetheless, the Bonzos were soon the highest paid band on the touring circuit not to have a hit record. And here's some of that song, My Brother Makes the Noises for the Talkies, by the Bonzos' Doodah Dog Band.
What's all that noise about?
Why, don't you know that's only my brother is practicing?
My brother makes the noises for the talkies. There's not a single noise that he can't do. If you've forgotten what a parrot's talk is, I'll rock and illustrate that noise for you. He does the steam escaping from Linus leaving dock. He'll fake a razor scraping or else a cork. My brother makes the noises for the talk. There's not a single noise that he can't do. This is what I hear when I'm in bed. A bang, a rattle, like thunder overhead. Then cats meow and dogs bark. The only sleep I'll get is when I'm dead. A shot goes crack, a gale starts blowing. A dog goes crack, a cock starts crowing. Oh, you may think I'm kidding you, yet what I say is true. Just listen, I'll explain to you. My brother makes the noises for the talking. There's not a single noise that he can't do.
But then their act was purloined by the new Vaudeville Band, a group with some former Bonzo associates in its ranks, assembled to promote Winchester Cathedral, a songwriter's confection that was taking off. Inez was livid when he saw them doing blatant Bonzo business on TV. However, it provided more impetus to move away from vintage oldies and create contemporary material. Restyled as King's Road Promedeers in the latest gear, rather than bygone spivvies, they soon had a new deal with Liberty Records. As they prepared debut album Gorilla, Paul McCartney asked them to appear in Magical Mystery Tour. They performed Inez and Stanchell's Death Cab for Cutie in the strip club scene. It aired on Boxing Day 1967, a few hours after the first episode of a new ITV comedy sketch show aimed at children. Do Not Adjust Your Set included Eric Idle, Michael Palin, and Terry Jones in the cast, with the Bonzos providing anarchic musical interludes and Terry Gilliam supplying animations. Check out the Perilous Christmas Card online. It was a great show, wonderfully free, says Gillum today, because it was for children. The top brass at the studio didn't pay any attention to it, so we got away with murder. The audience wasn't just kids, but also students and adults rushing home from work to catch it. And John Cleese and Graham Chapman, apparently. The diverse cast became firm friends. Bonzo Madness and Python Madness were similar degrees of madness from different angles, says Yvonne. Neil really enjoyed that. He loved mental sparring. As the show aired through 1968, the Bonzos, at least, shot to fame. The group's second manager, Jerry Braun, also produced their early Liberty Records. When Inez complained about him hustling them through standard three-hour sessions, Braun called his bluff and asked who else they were going to get. Imagine his surprise when we said Paul McCartney, laughed Inez. Maka had heard some demos and selected Inez's song, I'm the Urban Spaceman, as a potential single. There was a lot of talk at the time about urban spaces, Inez recalled. Bomb sites, gaps between houses, derelict factories, what we later called brownfield sites. I figured if there were urban spaces, they needed an urban spaceman. Here's some of that song, I'm the Urban Spaceman, from the Bonzo Dog Band.
I'm the urban spaceman, baby, I've got speed. I've got everything I need. I don't feel pain. If you were to knock me down, I'd just get up again. I'm the urban spaceman, baby, I'm making out. I'm all about.
Urban Spaceman gave Inez his first and only hit record. Tours of America ensued, and because the Bonzos weren't selling many records, long tours of the UK were also required to sustain a living. Rodney Slater recalls the way Inez would diffuse tensions as the band became increasingly frazzled after almost 5 years of nonstop work. He and Vic were having a blazing row in some awful dressing room after one show. Vic is getting really worked up about something, and he finally goes right outside and takes off his jacket, getting ready for fist cuffs. Neil opens the dressing room door. Vic walks through it, and Neil calmly closes the door behind him. It was hilarious. His timing was perfect. Vic thumped on the door a few times and then came back in looking sheepish. It was perfect. I still laugh thinking about it. That was typical Neil. Stanshall, riddled with issues, increasingly reliant on booze and Valium, finally snapped and announced he was leaving. They finished a contracted tour and disbanded. Inez immediately formed a new band, The World, intent on leaving anarchy and parody behind. But though the lineup was strong and the idea promising, Inez's songs weren't quite developed enough to take on the progressive rock climate The World was heading into. The album was a convincingly flop. Meanwhile, his old TV chums were taking off as Monty Python's Flying Circus. With record deals and stage shows being offered, they realized they needed a musical component. Eric Idle wrote songs, but he didn't have Ina's facility to conjure fun, like the reggae version of Terry Jones's song about agrarian reform in the Middle Ages. Ina's became a regular presence on their theater tours, providing front of tab entertainment, as well as appearing in the sketches with music. Terry Gilliam was particularly fond of Ina's, coming on as Country Walker, dubious singer of protest song. He'd come out and say, "I've suffered for my music. Now it's your turn." Gilliam says, giggling at the memory, it became Ina's catchphrase. When Python was touring Canada in particular, Neil and I shared the same dressing room and became really good friends. We loved discussing the absurdity of the world. Canada had built these theaters across the country that were identical in every way. The same plans were used. We'd go from one city to another, and it felt like the same place. We got hysterical about that. Neil and I did things the others couldn't do. We had a special place. The others had far more stage time than we did, so we got to hang back, laughing at them and observing the relationships. We were interested in the same stuff: civilization, society, politics. We thought we were very smart and cool in our objectivity, but of course, we were not. In 1975, after Python's live at Drury Lane show, Eric Idle got the chance to make his own series for the BBC, Rutland Weekend Television, and ask Ina's to join him. All the humor revolved around the idea that England's smallest country had the smallest, most inept TV station. Ina's had the idea for a local answer to the Beatles and wrote, "I Must Be in Love." He wanted to call the group the Boodles, after a suburb of Liverpool, but Idle insisted it to be the Ruttles, with one T as in Rutland. An appearance by Idle on Saturday Night Live in October 1976 included a showing of the Ruttles clip. The feedback was so positive that showrunner Lorne Michaels commissioned a full-length documentary, All You Need Is Cash. We did it to give a hug to the people who were hurting that the Beatles had broken up and were never getting back together again, said Ina's. What if the Beatles hadn't existed, but those fools had? Eric Idle wrote an outline script and went with director Gary Weiss to show it to George Harrison just before shooting. We were talking over what we were going to do. Some of the sarcastic stuff or cynical stuff we were going to do, said Weiss in a 2008 Ruttles documentary. George was there with his guitar. I can remember it perfectly. He was strumming and listening, and he said, "Jesus, you guys, we were the Beatles." Then he thought for a moment and went, "Ah, fuck it." The sketchy script meant the cast was required to ad lib dialogue. One memorable scene, Lampoon's John and Yoko's Amsterdam bed-in, wherein Ron Nasty, Ina's, and his wife, Chastity, actress Gwen Taylor, who exhibits sculptures dropped out of high buildings, and whose father invented World War II, are interviewed sitting in a bathtub. For peace, Inez improvised. We're sitting in this shower getting wet because we came to the conclusion that civilization was nothing more than an effective sewage system. And so, by the use of plumbing, we hope to demonstrate this to the world. Idol has claimed that John and Yoko enjoyed the scene. I thought, that's great of Yoko to love it, because she's portrayed as Hitler's daughter. But then I realized you cannot be married to John Lennon without a fantastic sense of humor, which she has. Still, a reporter from the San Diego Union-Tribune interviewing Inez about the Ruddles said that Yoko had told him that the Lennons weren't amused. Asked if she'd considered legal action, she replied after a long pause, "We are very careful what we litigate about." Not so cautious were ATV Music, the owners of the Beatles' Northern Songs, who, once an album full of Inez's careful homage to the Fabs neared its March 1978 release, claimed that their clients deserved 90% of the publishing. A musicologist was hired at Inez's expense to prove otherwise, but his publishers, although told they'd win, opted to cave because they might not get cost. Despite intervention from Harrison, who wasn't part of Northern Songs, ATV eventually took 50% of Inez's earnings on behalf of Lennon and McCartney. It was a huge blow to Inez, who'd taken great care not to infringe his hero's songs and had dropped material from the album that the Beatles themselves told him came too close, such as the Get Back counterpart, Get Up and Go. And here's some of that song, Get Up and Go, by the Ruddles. Suggested they should rename the LP The Songs of Lennon, McCartney, and Inez. Idol and Inez were thrilled one evening when, while visiting George and Ringo, the two Beatles spontaneously broke out into a chorus of Ouch, Inez's perfect pache of Help. And here's a little bit of that song, Ouch, by the Ruddles.
I'm falling apart, ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch.
When we first met, I must admit, I felt for you right from the start. Now when we meet, all kinds of things, it seems upset the apple cart.
All kinds of things, it seems upset the apple cart. Ouch, don't desert me, ouch, please don't hurt me, ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch.
What is this thing called love? Why do they say it makes the world go round?
Why do they say it makes the world go round?
I can't explain the way I feel for you. My feet don't touch the ground.
The way I feel for you, my feet don't touch the ground.
Ouch, don't deserve me. Ouch, please don't hurt me. Ouch, 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 ouch. When we first met, I must admit, I fell for you.
One upside of the Ruddles' success, curiously considering how fondly it is remembered, the original film had one of the worst ratings in NBC history, was that Inez was asked to front his own TV series of musical parodies for BBC Two. The Inez Book of Records was full of beautifully observed vignettes with many new songs which ran for three series, but has never been repeated. The 80s were musically rather lean for Inez, though he veered successfully into the realm of children's television, working on The Book Tower and the fondly recalled Raggy Dolls as chief storyteller. In the 90s, when the Beatles anthology was announced, one of its marketing execs, Martin Lewis, got in touch with the idea of doing a parallel project with the Ruddles. Archaeology would be a mix of outtakes and fresh material. This time, Inez cleared all the publishing. Imagine his horror then when Virgin Records was served with an injunction 6 weeks before release because, according to Yvonne, the album allegedly infringed Eric Idle's ownership of the name Ruddles. Once again, fighting his corner left Inez hugely out of pocket. The cost took most of his advance and a percentage of his royalties, and delayed the project enough for it to feel something of a damp squib. Inez was devastated, and though he laughed it off in interviews, ever after, often mentioning Harrison's remark, "You're supposed to be parodying us, not copying us," the injustice left him scarred. Actor Nigel Planner worked with Inez several times, most memorably when he appeared with the Idiot Bastard Band, a regular gig for Inez. Aid Edmondson and friends, who met once a month to play anything they fancied. Planner joined them in a rendition of Strangely Strange but Oddly Normal by Dr. Strangely Strange. He was very taken with Inez's modesty, calm, and organization, bringing his own gear to the show and obviously relishing the freedom and camaraderie it allowed. But he noticed that Inez made several rueful references to being sued. His decent demeanor meant he wasn't very grabby, like an egotistical stand-up who puts themselves at the center of everything, and he left himself open to being ripped off when it came to credits and royalties. Muses Planner. Look at what he wrote over the years. It's a massive body of work, but I think he got rather overlooked. It's a shame he got fenced off into parody. The Bonzos were a cultural turning point, a bit like the Young Ones. Neil was great at finding that balance between music and comedy. A joke requires a surprise and a payoff, and music has to get under your skin. So the two things fight each other. In a way, it's doomed from the start. But Inez's expertise hit marks you wouldn't expect. Artist and friends Harry Pye recalls, "I once made his day by telling him I'd read in Mojo that Elvis Presley had his own cinema and loved to watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail." The King knew all the words to Neil's song, "Brave Sir Robin Ran Away." Inez emailed, "That makes me one of the few people on the planet to have been impersonated by Elvis Presley, not the other way around. I have done it now. I've got no more ambition. Here's some of that song, Brave Sir Robin, by Monty Python.
Mafia boss Enrico Marx, who is himself married to Conchita Macbeth, a lively belly dancer at a Belgian disco, whose manager, burly Ivan Crabb, has a naked daughter, Janice, engaged to J.J. Spim, a New York private detective, employed by elegant Laura Herron to trace the missing million-pound B-Day that Hitler gave to Eva Braun as a bar mitzvah present during a state visit to Crufts, and which remained hidden until a World Cup referee, Horst Jenkinson, was found hanged in a New Jersey tenement with the plans of a Russian secret weapon partially tattooed on his elbow. In Brisbane, the Brain brothers, Nicky and Vance, torture a Mayfair trichologist who reveals to Dora Brain in a tender and emotional death scene that his hair is not his own. Meanwhile, the Kent Touring Eleven have trapped husky Matilda Tritt on a sticky near Hastings, and she reveals all before enforcing the follow-on. Peter Neeserwand and Cyril Garfunkel arrive just in time with the Welsh police and the Halley Orchestra and proceed to sing a love song which allows...
Inus's final work almost didn't make it out. Having crowdsourced its recording budget through Pledge Music, Inus was thwarted once again when Pledge went bust, and he could salvage only a fraction of the money his fans had donated. He managed to borrow enough to make an album he'd worked on for a while, a 2019 collection he called Nearly Really. That's a great album, says Terry Gilliam. Very deep, too. In a weird act of presence, Inus has spent weeks perfecting a song called Body and Soul, in which the titular entities bid each other farewell. Yvonne didn't like listening to him write it and finds it hard to listen to now because Inus died suddenly just as the album was due to be released. Harry Pye. Neil was always positive, polite, and full of encouragement. He always said yes to things. He suffered fools. He was very patient, and I think everyone who met him will tell you stories of his kindness. He made everyone feel special. Filled with random thoughts and bon mots, Inus's notebooks include one page that helped sum him up. Its last two entries read, "Only a closed mind is certain about anything. Leave the bathroom as you wish to find it." Now on to the obituary about Kris Kristofferson, titled Be Glad We Had Some Time. Outlaw country great, master songwriter and actor, Kris Kristofferson left us on September the 28th. The last time Kris Kristofferson played on stage was in April 2023 at the Hollywood Bowl, part of a two-night celebration of the 90th birthday of his friend and fellow highwayman, Willie Nelson. Kristofferson, 3 years Willie's junior, sang on both nights. This would have seemed a miracle 7 years ago when, diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I saw him sitting in the wings of a Nashville arena watching a bevy of country stars playing tribute to songs he wrote but could no longer play. As it turned out, he was misdiagnosed. After treatment for Lyme's disease, he was back on the boards. That first Hollywood night, he sang Loving Her Was Easier, one of his great early love songs, as a duet with Roseanne Cash. On the second, he sang Help Me Make It Through the Night, another of his standards, with Nora Jones. His voice was soft and raspy, but then, even half a century ago, when he was in his mid-30s and recording his first albums, Nashville seemed to view him as a songwriter more than a singer. His 1970 debut, Kristofferson, a masterclass in songwriting, flopped. It was only Janis Joplin's successful cover of Me and Bobby McGee that led to the album's reissue in 1971, when it made the top 10 country chart and Billboard's top 50. And here's some of the song, Me and Bobby McGee, from Kris Kristofferson.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Busted flat in Baton Rouge and heading for the trains. Feeling nearly faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. Took us all away to New Orleans. I took my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana and was blowing sad while Bobby sang the blues. With them windshield wipers slapping time and Bobby clapping hands, we finally sang a velvet song that driver knew.
Freedom. His songs have been covered by countless singers in multiple genres, from Al Green to Tom Verlaine. But there's nothing like hearing these simple-seeming but deeply profound songs about love, sex, loneliness, booze, and freedom, sung in the ragged voice of the man who wrote them. Born on June 22, 1936, to an Army family in Brownsville, Texas, he wrote his first song, aged 11. I Hate Your Ugly Face finally emerged as a bonus track on 2009's Closer to the Bone. He was 29, as old as Hank Williams when he died, he told me. When he decided to move with his wife and kids to Nashville and devote himself to make a living at it. Given his background and career, few would have expected this turn of events. Certainly not his parents, who disowned him. Kristofferson was very likely the only country singer-songwriter on the block with a Rhodes Scholarship and a master's degree in English literature from Oxford University. As a student and would-be novelist, his stories and essays were published in Atlantic Monthly, and he was the sports editor of his college newspaper, as well as excelling as a rugby player and Golden Gloves boxer. It was in England that he made his first attempt at songwriting fame. While at Oxford, he saw an ad in the Daily Mirror placed by Paul Lincoln, owner of the Two's Coffee Bar in Soho, looking for talent. Kristofferson sent him some now long-forgotten songs, and Lincoln wrote back. He didn't want me to sing at the club, Kristofferson told me, so he obviously didn't think I was much of a singer. Lincoln gave Kristofferson a new name, Kris Carson. He said, there were too many syllables in my name, said Kris, but nothing came of it. Back in America, Kristofferson married his high school sweetheart and, like his father, joined the U.S. Army, attaining the rank of captain while stationed in Germany. Kristofferson put a band together named the Boozers and giggled at spots where Elvis played when he was stationed in the military. After learning that his platoon leader was related to a Nashville music publisher who wrote Long Black Veil, he made a decision. If you were cut out to be an artist, Kristofferson said in 1999, citing William Blake, it was your mortal responsibility to be one, or you'd be haunted throughout your life and after death, till eternity. He resigned his commission and took a job as janitor at Columbia Studios. He emptied the ashtrays when Bob Dylan was there recording Blonde on Blonde. He recorded a single in 66, Golden Idol, which flopped. He got hired by an oil company as a helicopter pilot. And yes, he really did fly a chopper into his hero, Johnny Cash's backyard, to deliver him a demo tape. The first song of Christofferson's, which Cash covered, would be Sunday Morning Coming Down, a hit in 1970. As their friendship deepened, Christofferson wrote The Pilgrim, chapter 33 about Cash, for his second LP, The Silver-Tongued Devil and I, 1971. Here's a little bit of one of my favorite Kris Kristofferson songs, Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. Didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled through my closet for my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt. And I shaved my face and combed my hair and stumbled down the stairs to meet the day. I'd smoked my brain the night before on cigarettes and songs that I'd been picking. But I lit my first and watched a small kid cussing at a can that he was kicking. Then I crossed the empty street and caught the Sunday smell of someone.
In the 70s, Christofferson also began a movie career that was as successful, maybe more so, as his music. It began when Dennis Hopper, fresh from Easy Rider, asked him to create the soundtrack for The Last Movie in 1971. When a stuntman quit and Christofferson mentioned he could ride a horse, Hopper gave him an acting part. Roles kept on coming, from Pick and Path's Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, 1973, to a Golden Globe winning performance in A Star is Born with Barbra Streisand, 1976. And continued to do so through the 80s. In 1985, Christofferson joined Cash, Willie Nelson, and Waylon Jennings in the outlaw country supergroup The Highwaymen. Their debut album made the top of the country charts. When it came to Christofferson's own albums, things were more leaner. Through his 1995 LP, A Moment of Forever, was something of a comeback, containing his best collection of songs since his first two LPs. In more recent years, his output included the reflective This Old Road, 2006, and his self-released double album, The Cedar Creek Sessions, 2016, offering new and sometimes wistful interpretations of his old songs. You can't help but look over the journey, he said. Throughout that journey, he remained a well-loved, stand-up guy and memorably walked on stage to support Sinead O'Connor at a Dylan tribute in 1992 as the audience booed her after she protested against the Catholic Church. He was grateful, he said, for the movies because both careers are totally unpredictable, and I felt a lot of the time the films picked up the slack for the band. But asked if he thought of himself as an actor or a musician, he answered without hesitation, writer. And the classic opera review this week is Rocket to Russia by the Ramones, 1977. This isn't where it began, it's where it was perfected. The third record in the Ramones' discography, Rocket to Russia, is where the Ramones came into their own and created an album that would put the band on a pedestal for years to come. Chock full of hits, the album is the record that all rock fans are familiar with, but not all own. These are the songs that have been played on the radio at various times or in the background of a movie that you just can't seem to shake. You may not know it, rock fan, but Rocket to Russia is part of your psyche, whether you realize it or not. There's no stopping the cretins from hopping, declares the first line of album opener Cretin Hop. The album blast open with a burst of sound from Johnny Ramone's guitar, driven by the rhythms of bassist Dee Dee and drummer Tommy. Here's a little bit of that song, Cretin Hop, by the Ramones from their album Rocket to Russia. Vocalist Joey sweetens the mix a bit, and before you know it, Dee Dee is signaling the first 1, 2, 3, 4, and the first surf guitar strains are heard in the classic Rockaway Beach. The 50s-style backups are a central part of the song and the Ramones sound, while the listener is left with the taste of salt air and searching for a beach ball in play. Here's part of the Ramones song, Rockaway Beach. Here Today, Gone Tomorrow follows, slowing the tempo down considerably. Joey's crooning dominates the song with his plaintive O-O-O-O repeated throughout. This is the first true ballad that the Ramones had recorded to this point. Eschewing silliness for true emotion, it was arguably the most mature song the band had recorded at that time. Locket Love continues with that same 50s vibe, switching upbeat sounds for decidedly downbeat lyrics. Hang on a little bit longer, hang on, A, 'cause you're a goner. A big part of the Ramones' genius was being able to take negative thoughts and expressing them in a way that felt positive. The aforementioned Locket Love makes the listener want to bounce around joyously, while the following, I Don't Care, brings a fist-pumping joy to apathy about the world and that girl, with Joey and Dee Dee backing each other on the I Don't Care lyric. Arguably the band's greatest and most well-known song, Sheena is a Punk Rocker, is burned into the brain of every self respecting rock fan. Another song influenced by the sounds of surf guitar, the Ramones are at their arguable peak on this song. And here's a little bit of that song, Sheena is a Punk Rocker, by the Ramones. On his 2007 DVD, Uncut from Israel, Henry Rollins cited Rocket to Russia as being key to international diplomacy. Loading up a plane with their albums, Rollins suggested they be flown and dropped over the Palestinian territory and Israel. All of a sudden, all over this land, the Ramones are being played. Eventually, the two opposing sides come face to face, with one asking, "Are you guys playing the Ramones?" And after being prodded as to what album, an opposing soldier answers, "Rocket to Russia." Quickly, it's understood that they are all Ramones fans. It's good to know that, 'cause we were about to kill all you guys. Johnny Ramone may not have thought it would bring a solution to armed conflicts, but he knew the album was special, as he declared Rocket to Russia to be his favorite Ramones album in his posthumously published autobiography, Commando. Giving it an A+, Johnny declared that it was the best Ramone album with the classics on it. The band had reached its peak, both in the studio and live. This one has one great song after another. From here on, we played pretty much this whole album live. Hard to argue with the master. A classic. Unfortunately, once again, we're out of time. Please join me next week when I read articles from the February 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine, the cover story about the Rolling Stones in 1969, and a classic album review of Luck of the Draw by Bonnie Raitt. Until then, this is Andy Bombeck for Mojo Music saying so long and keep rocking.
Ready to go, then I got this.